I ran across a very interesting cookie at recently at the National Products Expo in Anaheim. It's a battle cry: what we leave out matters as much as we put in. That leads us to ask, which do you think is most important, the ingredients in the cookie or the ingredients left out of the cookie?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1420th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friend down there in Perryopolis, who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, at the Natural Products Expo, it's easy to see what is the latest trend in food. The last time I attended the expo, which is a few years ago, the dominant trend among the 4,000 vendors was soy. It seemed like most every vendor of natural foods was infusing their natural foods with soy. This year, it seemed that very few manufacturers of natural foods were adding soy. Gone. This year, it seemed most all the manufacturers were adding protein. This with pea protein, that with hemp protein, and over there, whey protein. But as I cruised the exhibition halls, Wholesome Bakery of San Francisco caught my attention with a line of smartly packaged cookies. What caught my eye was Wholesome's positioning statement: what we leave out matters as much as what we put in. That thought stopped me in my tracks right there, and today I ask, which matters most? What is put in the food or what is left out of the food? Well, here to help us bake up an answer, we have Mandy Harper, who is the founder, CEO, and executive chef of Wholesome Bakery in San Francisco. Welcome to the food chain.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's nice to be here. Appreciate
Well, we're going to have some fun today talking about cookies, because what could be more fun? And talking
it.
about cookies.
Everybody loves cookies.
Everybody loves cookies. And it's pretty much true, isn't
Yeah, there's not a person on the planet who doesn't enjoy a cookie. Let's be real. Yeah.
Well, why is that, Mandy?
They're perfect. They're crunchy, they're sweet. If they're made right, they've got the right balance of salt, and they're just, it's everything. You can eat it, pop
Everything.
it in your mouth. It's perfect.
Yes. Well, I remember the mother cooking up cookies in the kitchen,
There you go.
and with five kids, they didn't
Whoa.
last very long at all.
Whoa, 5 kids, that's a lot.
There's a lot of kids in the family. But we do love cookies, and you've been doing cookies for quite some time. Well, actually, not really. When did you start transition to consumer product goods cookies?
Just honestly, just like 2025, we launched.
Okay, so
Like,
we're in a new
yeah,
business for you then.
totally. So prior to that, it was mostly brick and mortar, kind of retail sales. And we spent 2025 kind of pivoting, revamping the company. And
Oh,
then,
how exciting! Wow. And there you were at the Natural Products Expo, standing amidst the giants of the industry with your cookie. And somehow, your cookie caught my attention. And there's a lot of things that did not catch my attention at the Natural Products Expo, but yours did. Part of it was the fact that you had this incredible positioning statement. And the other part of it was, well, here's somebody who started baking cookies or baking in her kitchen and is transitioning to selling her cookies to the entire world. So this is a major step for any business. And I thought both of those elements would make a great story, and thus here we are today. Take us back to your kitchen in your apartment in San Francisco.
So about 2007, I was vegan most of my life. I no longer am. I had a bunch of health issues, but I was vegan for about 20 years and couldn't do soy. I'm allergic to soy, and the fact that companies aren't doing soy now, I feel like I have that's like a feather in my cap. I think that has a lot to do with me, and I'll tell you why. But I was allergic to soy. I can't really do gluten. Have all these health issues, and I started creating these products. I did it for not only just my own health. Is my mom is Native American. I was raised in a household where we didn't have a lot of these ingredients. And mind you, around this time, my brother was diagnosed with brain cancer, and so sugar, yeah, feeds cancer cells, like white sugar. So I started developing these products that were, free of all these things, including refined white sugar. So I was using coconut sugar and things that like were not normal in any capacity. And I just started making them for myself, for my brother, for my friends. And I went to school for design, did that, loved it, but I was always really connected to food. I've worked in the food industry since I was 15, and just kind of kept getting pulled in that direction, and finally got the guts to drop off some samples at a couple local grocery stores here in San Francisco, and they picked them up. And I was like, oh my God, I guess I'm doing this.
So right there from your apartment kitchen, you're
Yep.
selling into the stores in
Yeah.
San Francisco. Good.
Yep.
And they probably, since they were smaller stores, they would listen to you and taste the cookies, right?
Yes. So yeah, I got like what is called a cottage food license to do that. And then as we got, kind of busier, I got a shared kitchen. I worked out of a panaderia in the Mission District here in San Francisco. And slowly grew my company and bopped around a few different shared kitchens, and then got the opportunity to open a small little cafe inside of this like little outdoor goods store in the Mission. And then from that, I was like, oh, maybe I should open a brick and mortar. And so I took the leap and I opened a 2,000 square foot bakery here in San Francisco, which is not an easy feat. It is so expensive to have a business here. It is unbelievable. And, people are picky here. They are not, it's not like
It's
a,
a fruity place.
people are hard. And I'm very proud to say that, at the age of 34, I built a $1 million company that year. And so we grew very quickly and we were doing great. COVID hit. That made things really tricky.
That was going to be one of my questions. What happened in COVID for the restaurant industry?
It was horrific. Like no other way to put it. It was so scary. Everyone had to send most of their staff home. I had to, furlough, whatever you call it, the vast majority of my staff. I think I kept on like two or three people so we could kind of just keep the engine running. Overnight, our sales were abysmal, just like everyone. We were doing, luckily, we had a lot of people trying to help support us. So we were doing about $30,000 in online sales a month. So people were still trying to keep us going, which was amazing. Yeah, and so
These
that.
were your customers that could no longer go in or were afraid to go in,
100%.
and then
Yeah.
could order your cookies, or what were you selling online at the time?
Yeah, so our product offering was significantly larger than it is now. So, we did a lot of fresh bake stuff. So, I had my packaged cookies and things like that, but people could get like, God, what were we offering? Like banana bread and like quiches and we made whole loaves, country oat loaf in house, tons of stuff. We had so much we could offer. And but yeah, that year 2020, our sales were significantly like cut in half. And then every year, got up and up. So we got back to our number. But I kind of got to a place where I was like, okay, two things happened. I got kind of burnt out. If you could believe it, it was a lot. And we got the opportunity to go into Whole Foods, and I knew I couldn't do that in the facility we were in. I needed to find a bigger space, so it didn't really
And
make.
what did Whole Foods want to sell
Oh,
that was
yeah.
free?
So our products that are currently in the market, so our cookie sandwiches, our almond tea cake, our fudge brownie. So they picked all of those up, which was amazing. So I knew at that point it was okay. I had to figure out how to make all this happen. We had to completely rebrand, create new packaging, and I had to find a facility that could do that. Because you got to keep in mind, like my team, we were hand making everything, which is great, but it took my one person probably 6 minutes to scoop a tray of cookies that had maybe 36 cookies on it, right? And I was like, this is not
So now
sustainable.
you're faced with having to scale your business up
Correct.
to deal with your customer who sells a lot of cookies.
Totally.
Whole
So
new business world then for you.
different. So it took us a very long time, but we eventually found a facility that was gluten-free and like met our standards. And I am incredibly picky and crazy about ingredients and quality and all of the quality, just everything. And so they are equally the same, and they're great partners. And so yeah, I was able to transition everything over to them, and but that was a whole process. We're going from batches that we're making in-house that are maybe like 10 pounds to 150 pound batches. So I had to rework and rework and rework those recipes to get them right, because it's just like the smallest things. It's like I'm not able to source the exact same flour that I was sourcing here in California. I have to, find something that's over there, and all the little bits and bobs that make it a challenge. It's like if it's not milled, if the flour is a different mill, or and it's like the grain size, if it's milled like slightly thicker, it absorbs more water. It's the whole thing. So a lot of learning there. And it was a whole process, and
That
yeah,
sounds like a lot of scrambling for you.
a lot of everything, a lot of everything, a lot of work, a lot of change. But I like a challenge. I really like pushing myself. And I know I have something incredible. I know I've built a product that no one else can make, because I have no direct competitors. Like, no one can do what I'm doing, because if they could, they'd be doing it.
In what respect? No one is
So,
doing what you're doing. Everybody's making cookies, but nobody is making wholesome bakery cookies. What is the essential difference between your cookie and everybody else's cookie?
yeah. So our cookies are gluten-free. They're also dairy and egg-free. They're soy-free. They're refined sugar-free. They're free of any gums, any additives, any
Those are all of the
preservatives.
things that you don't put in. That other manufacturers are likely to put in because it makes the whole baking process a lot simpler and easier
And cheaper.
and cheaper.
Cheaper. I don't scrimp. Yeah. I go the extra mile. I really care about not only what I'm putting into.
So we have a minute before the break. You have an incredible ethic
Thank you.
about what you put in. We'll take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to ask where you got that ethic from. I mean, it's much easier to do it the other way. It's much simpler. It's will cost less. It's easier to find the manufacturing. Everything about doing it your way is doing it the hard way, the expensive way. I want to know where you got that ethic. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio podcast. Today, we're having a lot of fun talking about cookies. And what could be more fun talking about cookies than with Mandy Harper, who is the executive chef of Wholesome Bakery in San Francisco, also its founder and CEO, and everything else. We will be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
What they don't put in the cookie matters as much as what they do put in the cookie. That is an incredible ethic to have when you're in the business of selling cookies. Because in the world of commodity agriculture, which is to say commodity food, it always seems to be he or she who can grow the most for the least wins.
Yeah.
And yet here is Mandy Harper taking exactly the opposite approach.
Yeah.
Now, where did you develop that ethic, Mandy?
I think a few places. My as I mentioned, my mom's Native American. She really cared about.
What does that have to do? What is your mother?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Tell us about your mother.
Exactly. So she really cared about what ingredients were in our house. She really cared. We didn't have white sugar in our house. We didn't really have gluten. We didn't have dairy. My mom was really vastly aware of how ingredients impact our bodies. And she, you know, she wasn't perfect, but she did everything in her power to really understand. And she just, we grew a lot of our own produce. She just knew the natural, like, holistic way, if you will, of food is always going to be the better route. And I mean, if you look at ingredients today, or I'm sorry, you look
kind
at
of a, kind of like a mother's ethic right there.
Yeah, sure.
I'm feeding my children. I want to know what's in the food. Okay.
Yeah, sure. I mean, she, this is something that just kind of lived inside of her that, you know, like I'd go to friends' houses and they had Gushers and they had Dunkaroos and they had all these sugary cereals. My house, we didn't have that. I'm not kidding you. We had Grape Nuts and Wheaties. That was it. That was it. I did not have any of those things in my household. Like my mom once a year would buy like frosting for a birthday cake. That
And
was
when
like,
you were a child and you went to a friend's house and they had all of those
yeah.
things.
Was I excited?
Yes.
Oh, hell yes. Like
Okay.
I have the biggest sweet tooth, which is why I made this company, because I was tired of going to grocery stores and everything there is just filled with crap. And then you eat it, you're like satisfied for 2 seconds. You get that like surge of sugar in your body, and then you feel like
Boom.
crap within minutes and regretful.
And want more and need more to keep it
Correct.
going. So
Correct.
you
And
have that ethic from your mom, but also from the maladies, the physical maladies of living. Both you and your family had this. Have things you had to come to grips with, as does everybody when it gets right down to it.
Yep.
And those also steered you in the direction of what not to put in food.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And I just, so at a young age, I became vegan at a really young age, and I became really obsessed with ingredients and food. And I started reading a lot about just how everything affected everything from the small working farmer to the environment to just the economy. And I just started to develop this obsession with ingredients and food and how they affect everything.
Well, you kind of in your statement, what we leave out matters as much as we put in.
Yeah.
It's kind of a 50-50 there. So is one more important than the other?
I mean, in my head, it's a little bit of the same statement, right? It is. It's just kind of two ways of looking at it that I think the vast majority of people don't totally think about, which is why I think it's a good value prop. I don't think people think about what is not in their food versus what is in their food.
Well, I'm committed to the belief that people are getting to the point
Yes, now.
where they look at the label.
Yeah.
And they, if they see something that they don't recognize, or if they recognize as being something that they don't want in their food, they will reject the food, even though it might have something like chocolate chips that they do like in their food. So I'm thinking that is an entrance to the world of food for your company.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. People are definitely changing the way they eat. And I, you know, feel very proud that like, I feel like I'm a part of that, and I've helped to kind of guide people in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if that's the right word, but just like, hey, like you can eat good food and not put all this stuff in your body. That's the whole kind of idea behind my company. It's like you can eat good food that isn't hurting you, isn't hurting the environment, and still be really satisfied because it's a great tasting product. People just, I think a lot of my competitors out there take, shortcuts and maybe just don't put invest the time in really understanding how these ingredients work and how to actually, like, I've definitely put in my 10,000 hours and reworked these recipes a million times to get them to where they are.
Let's try and look at some of the things you don't put in. On your website, you have a banner going across. Not this, not that, not this. Okay. No eggs. In baking, no eggs.
I
What's
know.
wrong with eggs?
There's nothing wrong with eggs. It's mostly that we are just trying to offer something alternative to people who can't have eggs, to people who don't want to eat eggs for the various reasons.
Okay, fair enough. No soy.
Soy.
Now
Oof.
you mentioned the fact that you were part of responsible for getting rid of soy in the world. Okay.
So I my company has been soy free since it started because I'm allergic to it. And I don't think, like most ingredients and most things in the world, I don't think soy is inherently bad. I think what has unfortunately happened is due to industrialization, soy has become a byproduct and an additive that has been injected into all of these, like, what am I trying to say? Products that shouldn't really be there, right? And so everyone is eating way more soy than they should be. And so what that is doing is that is causing people to have negative reactions to it, right? There's so many things I could go into about how it would, I don't want to like go on a diatribe, but nonetheless, we're just eating some way too much of something that we shouldn't.
Okay, fair enough. No peanuts.
So that was not actually my call. I love peanuts. I'm not allergic to peanuts. That was actually our most popular cookie was out of our facility was our peanut butter chocolate sea salt. But the facility we are in, again, is very particular and they are a peanut-free facility. So we will be in 2027 launching a new version of the peanut butter chocolate cookie sandwich made from almond butter. So I love peanuts, but we also understand that a lot of people can't have them, and we just have to be okay with
Yeah,
that.
you see that a lot. May have peanuts in it or processed in a facility that does have peanuts, and so it's like a warning to a lot of people, and there must be a lot of people out there. No gums. What do you mean by gums?
So these are a lot of like the filler ingredients that we kind of talk about. So again, a lot of these brands don't know how to either use the ingredients or they don't, they want to take an easy, cheap route. So they're putting things like xanthan gum in there to try and get the right texture or the right hold or all these different things that we don't do. And those gums, again, are just derivatives, they're additives, they're byproducts of corn and all these things, and we don't need them.
So are gums used to kind of like hold things together?
Mostly. You
Okay.
can use them in a few different ways, but
Kind of the same thing that eggs did too when it gets right down, kind of hold things together so they can fall apart. Okay. No gums. No refined sugars. Now, what is the difference between refined coconut sugar and refined sugarcane sugar?
So we don't use refined coconut sugar. Refined coconut sugar doesn't exist. It's just coconut sugar. So we are refined free sugar, period. So white sugar is cane sugar, right? And it's refined down. It's actually like bleached. So that basically to like get it that color, what a lot of people don't realize. And be what happens when you eat something that has no nutritional value, right? So like a bleached flour, a bleached sugar, anything in that world, these like refined oils, all that stuff, it has no nutritional content in it. So what happens is your body's like, oh, I haven't gotten what I needed. So I need to eat more. It's why you can eat an entire pizza because there's usually, if it's crappy pizza that doesn't have a good flour in it with no nutrients, you're going to keep eating because your body's like, I need more, more, more. And that's how you overeat.
There was a line in a Buffy St. Marie song called, it was, went something like this: white could be beautiful, but mostly it's not. And when it comes to food, that's pretty much true.
Totally, totally.
If
Yeah. And
it's white bread,
yeah.
there's nothing in it.
There's nothing in it. And like I said earlier, these refined ingredients are feeding like negative things in your body. They feed cancer cells. They create tons of inflammation. They're really just not good for you.
Okay, and then no fillers. What would fillers be?
So fillers could be something, anything in like the gum world. It could be anything in like that. What's a better example that I see a lot of people using? I'm blanking on some, but just a lot of like additives, just kind of byproducts, fillers, things to just kind of hold things together that really shouldn't be there. Like basically those words that have like 17
Yeah.
syllables that none of us really know what they are,
Okay. And that's something we should always look out for.
Totally.
No gluten. What happened to wheat?
Same thing. Wheat is not the enemy, but it's a similar thing of like industrialization, and there's a lot of byproducts created out of wheat, and it's been kind of injected into a lot of stuff. And we're also a lot of the wheat that is being consumed now is really, really, really low quality, and it's negatively impacting people. So, in America, the wheat we have here is pretty low quality. If you go overseas, a lot of people that I know that are gluten-free will go to Europe and they'll eat bread
Yeah.
there and have no problem, right? So
I've
it's
heard that. Yeah.
So it's not so much that wheat is the problem. It's just about how it is produced, grown, sold in the US. And so we want to offer, an alternative to our customers, because wheat can be very inflammatory. There are a lot of people who can't have it. I can't have it.
Well, it seems like a lot of people are in the gluten intolerant or and then there's celiac, so it's like a spectrum of problems with wheat. But I was raised in Montana on hard red winter wheat, which is the good stuff. And yet, what happened to wheat to make so many people intolerant of gluten? And it just it seems like more and more and more and more people are gluten intolerant as we go along.
I think it has to do with like a fundamental breakdown in the American food chain.
Okay, we'll let it go with that. No dairy.
No dairy.
All
Kind
right.
of same idea. Just trying to offer an alternative to people. Dairy is typically very inflammatory, and a lot of people can't have it. A lot of people are allergic to it, myself included. So, yeah.
Okay, well, what's in the cookie then? Whole ingredients.
Whole ingredients. So we're using things like gluten-free oat flour. What else? We use organic coconut sugar. We use fair trade, 72% dark chocolate. We're just about using good stuff, really simple ingredients. Like, a lot of these recipes, these ingredient lists you'll see have like a million things in them. Ours do not. And it's all the ingredients you can buy off the shelf anywhere.
One ingredient I saw, blue agave. And well, that's it. That's tequila.
That's tequila.
Okay.
It's a blue agave is pretty amazing. It is actually one of the most sustainable sweeteners in the world. It is one of those ingredients that has gotten sometimes a little bit of a bad name. If you it there are Because of industrialization, there are types of agave out there that have been ultra refined that are not good for you. But again, I go the extra mile. I work really hard to make sure we're using the real stuff, the natural stuff. It's not raising your glycogen levels. And we actually have a lot of diabetic customers who eat our products and have no issues.
Okay. Oils.
Kind of same idea. So everyone is using all these crappy seed oils out there. We use palm fruit oil. Similar ideas, kind of gotten a bad rap. thanks to industrialization. We work with this amazing company that they only work with small farmers, and they actually contribute to helping to regrow all the forests that have been decimated. Mind you, palm fruit oil is actually incredibly good for you. It's super nutrient dense and it's been used for thousands of years by tons of countries all over the world. And in America, we just aren't being told the correct information. People still think that canola oil is the oil to use. I'm like, oh my God, no.
Well, we have a lot of that, so why
Yeah,
not,
it's not.
right? And one other quick question. Turtle butts.
Oh, that was a joke.
That was a joke, okay?
That was a joke. We're pretty silly over here. We like to make people laugh. Yeah.
Well, and that's a good one too, because you are trying to industrialize something that's not industrial.
Yeah.
Which is the essence, I think, of what you mean by wholesome bakery.
Yeah.
So you're putting all of the right things in, leaving all of the wrong things out, and then trying to industrialize it so you can put it in a pretty package and sell it to everybody in the entire country. That's wholesome bakery. Mandy Harper is with us today. When we come back, I want to ask Mandy what it's like to go into competition with the big boys on the shelves of the nation's grocers or on the World Wide Web, where everything seems to be heading these days. I once butchered animals. Today, I butcher boxes because everything comes in a box now. Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Mandy Harper and you. Please do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-704-1662. 800-704-1662. That's 800-704-1662.
For ag and industrial real estate, call Chuck Allen. Chuck Allen is a lifelong resident of the Pajaro Valley, a friend of everybody, and has closed so many real estate transactions, the Wall Street Journal and Keller Williams both list him as one of the nation's top producers. So for ag and industrial real estate, call the top realtor, Chuck Allen, at ChuckAllenProperties.com. ChuckAllenProperties.com.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place while the USS Dale steamed through the South China Sea, January 1945.
In the South China Sea, we had weeks of weather that was either bad, worse, or worst. Sometimes it was so bad all you could do was tie yourself to a chair or in your rack and hold on. There was no way you could stand on deck. I remember looking out over the waves and seeing one of our sister tin cans do something that scared me out of my socks. That destroyer went completely airborne, like a fish jumping out of the water. I clearly remember seeing both its propellers spinning in the air. The sonar dome, which extends down from the bottom of the ship, completely cleared the surface of the water. I thought, if this is going on, we don't stand a chance.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. ordered your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
It's a fascinating notion that what is not put in the cookie is as important as what is put in the cookie. And I think there's a lot to that these days because people are becoming more cognizant of what shouldn't be in their food. And people are now able to find out what's in their food, especially if it's a consumer packaged goods. There it is. All the ingredients are right there for you to look at. People are looking, and it is making a difference. Now, Mandy Harper is putting together some cookies, started in her kitchen in an apartment in San Francisco, now in a fancy facility someplace that is very judicious in what it does and does not allow in the in their industrial baking processes. So you've got this wonderful cookie that has all the right things, none of the wrong things, and you put it in a beautiful package with a wholesome bakery label, and you take it to market. Wow. Yeah. What was your first big success?
Whole Foods was definitely first big success. That's been was really cool to launch in there. But it was also a big learning lesson. So when they launched us, this will be a good info for anyone in my space or just anyone trying to do this. They launched us in the bakery department. And after a few months of being in there, we found out that they did not tell us this. Yeah, we're not a bakery product. We are a center store product. We are a cookie aisle product. And they launched us in there and we found out that the guidelines for the bakery department are to throw away all products within 7 to 14 days.
Yeah. Wait, that's my cookie. Throw it
away. Correct. So we had a lot of problems. And so we are currently in the process of trying to move from the bakery department to center store. And it's a whole big thing. But, you know, it's a good learning lesson while we're young and new and figuring this all out.
Right. Now, what you have to offer is not considered a bakery good. It's considered a confectionery.
I'd say it's a more snack in the snack world. Food, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of cookies are more like regarded as like a snack item.
Right. And that is a major transition for you because you've been making baked goods.
Yeah.
And now you have a consumer processed good, mm-hmm. which is an entirely different world to get into. Now you're fighting for shelf space, right? So how does that work? You're a relatively new product.
Yeah.
You have a great product.
Thank you.
Is your price comparable?
Mm.
And you're making it with all the best good materials.
Yeah.
So you have to come in with a good price point.
Totally. You have to come in with a good price point. You have to really know your market. You have to really know the grocer. Some grocers are going to charge whatever the heck they want and you have no say. So what you have to do is figure out, okay, what is each grocery store or distributor? What is their markup? What is their margin? What is it likely going to be here versus there? And you have to spend a lot of time understanding your numbers and, okay, when is this going to become, you know, when is unit of economics going to kind of break in? When is the scalability going to be present, right? Because in the beginning, yeah, you're not going to make money in the beginning. It's just kind of impossible, right? Because you have to make the product, it's expensive to make, and you have to make the product customer-friendly price. So our product sells anywhere from about, I've seen it as low as, God, what, like $4.99, maybe $5.49, something like that, to $6.99. And so for a premium product, I think it's a good price. Our product actually moves very well. We have really high velocities, I'm grateful to say. We have a really large fan base, and we hold on to them pretty well. But yeah, it's been a ride and a road, and luckily I had already had in kind of Northern California out of my brick and mortar, I had some wholesale business prior to that we did. And so I'd already made a name for myself and had some accounts here. So we're pretty solid in the Bay Area.
Which is a
Earlier.
good place to be, to a good place to have a base.
Totally, 100%. And so we in
If you were to do this in Winnemucca, Nevada,
when oh what about Nevada?
if you were to do this, if you were to start a cookie line in Winnemucca, Nevada,
Oh,
which has a
yes.
very small consumer
Totally.
base, it would be
Totally.
a different story entirely.
100%. Absolutely.
So it helps to have a population to distribute to.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we launched as of this year. So 2025 was really a year of kind of like R&D, building,
Making a
relaunching,
big transition.
making a huge transition. Huge, 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 huge. Kind of teaching our new customer, our old customers, hey, we're here. This is who we are now, right? So that was a whole process. And in 2026, we launched this year, as of January, we launched in Erewhon and down in Southern California. And so we're in a bunch of stores down there and just trying to grow that. And so that's been a whole learning process of, okay, how do we open all of these doors down here? How do we make this DC successful when we're not there? So, how do we get in touch with these reps, because we're in UNFI? How do we get in touch with these reps that have no idea who we are and don't really care about us because we're still such small potatoes? So, all of that has been a learning
So that's
process.
why you were at Natural Products West.
I mean,
So
yeah,
this
just
is
to
a place where you meet.
totally. You get your word out there, your brand out there rather, and people get to try your products. Otherwise, like they don't know who you are. You don't really exist.
That's right. Now, tasting is a very big part of it. I noticed in a lot of big stores, they do tastings, product tastings.
Yeah.
You'll taste my cookie here.
Demos.
Yeah. Does I think Whole Foods might do it. I don't know. I'm not a very big customer of Whole Foods. I have a little local grocery store I go to here in
Yeah.
Santa Cruz. Yeah. But somehow you have to fight your way onto the shelves. And is it easier when you have a customer base that goes in and asks for the product? Or is it easier to have the product on the shelf and just wait for the customer to come by?
That's a very good question. Probably a little bit of both. I mean, it's really dependent on the buyer. Some buyers will take a chance and are okay if the product doesn't like move right off the bat. And some buyers, like I had, we launched with a couple grocery with a small chain in Hawaii, and they have an algorithm set up that it's all AI. And so if the product doesn't move fast enough within, a certain amount of time, they just immediately drop it. So we did a free fill for them, right? Just sent them the product. They had it for about 3 weeks, and no one in Hawaii knows who we are. So
That's right.
our product hasn't really moved it to their liking, and they immediately dropped us. And it's like, what? We just got it
Got
here.
there. How do you reach out and sell directly to consumers? It seems like with a new product like a cookie on a shelf
Yeah.
with all kinds of other cookies, you have to find some way of reaching into the consumer and saying, God, you have to try this. Go get some.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I mean, demos are very helpful. Demos are a big one. A lot of it is, you got to do online ads, you got to do marketing pushes, like email marketing, just really trying to get word of mouth out there, getting people talking about it. The best way to actually get customers is just word of mouth. You get
Sure.
one person talking about it, and then they tell their friend and so on.
It's kind of what happened to me because when you're on a media pass at the Natural Products Expo, they give you great big bags
Yeah,
and you
God.
collect all of this stuff
Yeah, so much.
so much. And then, But the first thing to disappear from my bag on the way home was the wholesome cookies,
Oh, thanks. Yay.
which is good. Part of the reason why we're here to get today.
Yeah.
Is there a way to transmit that via the internet? Have you explored that as a way of developing a social media campaign where you can reach out? And because what you're facing is the same problem all small businesses face
Totally.
going into a market dominated by giants,
Yep.
cookie monsters, you might
Cookie
call them.
monsters. Yes, well said. I mean, it gets really tricky, right? It used to be really easy to be on social media and get your products out there and really find an audience. The algorithm has changed so much. It's really, really hard to be successful.
So what are the algorithms guarding against? So they're
New.
like digital fence posts, right? They kind of
Totally.
keep you from going too far over here or
Yeah.
using kind of language or whatever.
Totally. And I understand why they had to do it. There's so much information on social media now, they had to put in guardrails, right? So it's like if you put up a post and you put it up at the wrong time or whatever, and it doesn't get a certain amount of eyes within that, they will just kind of downgrade it and then it will not be a successful post. So learning all of those tricks and really trying to kind of, I guess, if you will, hack the algorithm and give it what it wants, it's relentless and it's really hard. Yeah, it's very frustrating.
And yet it's a place where you can reach a vast number of people
Totally.
if you
Totally.
can figure out how to do it with it
Totally.
within, yeah.
Yes. And it's a business just like anything. They want you to pay for ads. They want you to pay them money because they know that you're making money off of their platform, right? So
Yeah.
nothing is free. And it's a pay to play with everything.
Out. Well, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't.
Yeah, for reals. Yep.
So you've been through this. You've been doing this 15 years. You have a lot of war stories. What was your biggest mistake?
Oh, that's a very good and hard question.
It is.
Probably most recently, I don't want to divulge too much, but most recently, I bringing the wrong person into your company. I brought the wrong person into the company and took them at face value and trusted them, and they really did not do any of the things they told me they
So
would.
when you're cooking the cookies in your kitchen, you can trust yourself because you're doing everything. And when you start selling cookies to the world, then you have to bring in people. And when you bring in people, that means
You have to trust them.
you have to, well, you have to trust them and you have to work with them, and that's a big pain in the butt.
100%.
What tip would you offer those who are looking at you as being a pathfinder, which is really what you're doing?
Thank you.
What tip would you offer someone starting out with a kitchen in their apartment?
Be resourceful, be relentless. That's
Right.
it. That's the thing that got me here is tenacity. Just you have to be a glass half full and you have to just keep trying and you have to be willing to sacrifice. That's it.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. Yeah.
No. What about the right ingredients and the wrong ingredients?
In what way? Yeah, give me a little more.
Well, you have this wonderful saying that what we leave out matters as much as we put in. So, I think authenticity is so important. And that's really to me what wholesomeness is all about.
Yeah, thank
It's
you.
being authentic
Yeah.
to your vision of good food.
Yeah.
And though offering good food in a world of or there's a lot of bad food, might seem like it would be a logical thing to do as a counter to everything that's we're offered. It's tough work. So which do you think is most important? What you put in or what you leave out?
That is such a hard one for me to answer because they're both so important to me. Oh.
Yeah, it's okay. We have 1 minute left. That's why I
Okay.
saved the 1 minute.
Oh, okay, great. That's a really hard question for me to answer because I think they're both so important. I don't think there's one that's more important than the other, you know? I
They're pretty
think,
much equal.
yeah, they both matter to me, you know? I spend so
Well,
much time.
it's so such a captivating expression that I think it's a great thing to put on your label
I
because it really stops people in your tracks, like it did me. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. We had Mandy Harper, who is the founder, CEO, executive chef of Wholesome Bakery. See, you're the chef,
Yep.
the executive, the everything.
Everything.
And
Yep.
that's what it takes to do it right?
100%. Yeah. It's not an easy task, but it can be done.
Well, we love your cookies and
Thank
wish you
you.
the best of luck.
Thank you so
And
much.
look forward to running into another Wholesome
Good.
Bakery cookie.
Good.
Thank you, Mandy Harper.
Thank you so much, Michael. You have a good one.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.